Tell the truth. Don't be bullshitting people. Like I say, there's enough bullshit as it is. In fact, there's just enough. Did you know that? There's just enough bullshit in this country to hold things together. Bullshit is the glue that binds us as a nation. Where would we be without our safe, familiar American bullshit? Land of the free, home of the brave, the American dream. All men are equal, justice is blind, the press is free, business is honest, the good guys win, your vote counts, the police are on your side, God is watching you. Your standard of living will always improve. And everything is going to be just fine. The official national bullshit story. I call it the American okey-doke. Every one of those items is provably untrue at one level or another, but we believe them because they're pounded into our heads from the time we're children. That's what they do with that kind of thing. Pounded into the heads of kids because they know the children are much too young to be able to muster an intellectual defense against a sophisticated idea like that. And they know that up to a certain age, children believe everything their parents tell them. And as a result, they never learn to question things. Nobody questions things in this country anymore. Nobody questions anything. Everybody's too fat and happy. Everybody's got a cell phone that'll make pancakes and rub their balls now. You know? Way too fucking prosperous for our own good. Way too fucking prosperous. Americans have been bought off and silenced by toys and gizmos. Then they want to show you the pictures. The pictures. Here's another ordeal. The pictures of these little gargoyles.
Resistance calling. White Aryan Resistance calling. This is the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network. Your host for today's show is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy. So get a spot of tea, sit down and relax, because it's time for another show on the White Aryan Resistance Radio Network.
Well, boys and girls, I always get jazzed up when I hear the Pope of the Church of What's Happening Now come on there. Yeah, he really lays it out there. He don't bullshit around, and that's good. It's good to listen to at least one person who doesn't bullshit. It is the glorious day of August the 30th, and we got, one more day here to go, so if you got some disastrous thing you want to overthrow the government or get in a submarine, attack the fleet, whatever you want to do. You don't have much time to do it. You got 24 hours, so otherwise this time will never come around again. No, this 2016, August 30th, will never exist again. So it's an important day. Anytime, any day is an important day when you look at it that way, right? I was looking over the internet here, and I look over this Black Lives Matter webpage, believe it or not. In fact, they send it to me, and there's some good stuff on there. And I noticed this one thing, police dogs matter. And only them, according to the criminal justice system, after the case of Kelantre Barfield, a black man, put in jail for 45 years for killing a police canine dog. We decided to find stats on police killing civilian dogs. The results are shocking. At least 25 dogs are killed by police every day, and not a single cop has been charged with this crime. Now, that's horrible. All you animal lovers out there, you got to protect your dogs from these damn cops, because one little growl and they'll kill your dog. No matter why they're there at your property. They treat your dogs like you're a homicidal maniac criminal on the run. So I agree with Black Lives Matter on that situation. It's a very sad situation. 25 privately owned dogs are killed every day in this country. I think it's probably a lot more than that. Well, that's why I say that most cops can't be trusted with a gun. I think that there are too many psychological problems, too many cops on drugs. Cops are one of the most frequent users of narcotics, and they're high degree of wife beaters and so forth like that. And whether it's the kind of people they have to deal with sometimes or what, they get brutal, they get mean. And when somebody that's brutal and mean has got a gun, you got a recipe for a problem. And so people expect me to be like the right wing. I support the cops. Well, I support what we used to call peace officers. Their job was simply to keep the peace, not to go out and shoot people unless they absolutely had to. I know this place I used to hang out once in a while over in Arizona was way out in the boondocks. And the peace officer there had hundreds of square miles to cover. He's not even going to come out there unless it's something really, really bad. And when they did come out there, he just to keep calm things down and keep the peace. He's not out there to shoot a bunch of people. It seems like the more people congested in a city, the more of this kind of activity, just shoot first and ask questions later, becomes the order of the day. And of course you know that they're not going to shoot, be very rare for cops to shoot a dog that belonged to a rich man. Get a call out to a big mansion out there, and you know, one of these $300,000-$400,000, $1 million houses, and they got dogs. How many of those dogs do you think would get shot by a cop? But down in the poor neighborhoods, working class neighborhoods, whether they're white or black or what, that's where they're going to shoot your dog. And if you're an animal lover out there, I would say that you ought to be writing letters to the newspapers and so forth, and mention this to the animal rights people and the dog pounds and so forth. Get them to understand this is going on, and see if they can put some pressure on these runaway copperoos that want to kill your dog. You got to understand one thing. Cops are scared to death. They always have had a certain amount of fear, but now these cops are afraid. They're afraid of their shadow. And that's why they pull their guns so quick, you know. And they don't want to go down a dark alley. Oh, yeah, the basketball player. The black basketball player. All the conservatives are going apeshit about it. Every right-wing show in the country is, oh, my God, he refused to stand up for the pledge of the flag. Well, I take the position that I'm not standing up to the pledge of the flag, and I'm not singing all their patriotic songs anymore. I haven't for quite a while. And I know that I go into some of these karaoke deals, and there's a couple of these country western super patriotic songs, and they even stand up and hold hands and shit like that. I won't do it. A country that has caused the death of millions of white people and shipped white soldiers all over the world for illegal wars and occupation, getting them killed, and all our people who've been shot down by the cops and the feds, are you kidding? I'm going to stand up and pledge allegiance to the flag and all that bullshit. Well, you can just tell all those conservative right-wingers, and you can play this recording for them, you can go plumb straight to hell. And I support this black guy for doing that, for whatever his reasons. At least he's demonstrating he's still somewhat free, that he has. They didn't run over there and beat his brains in. He did it. And how many people in this country got any guts anymore to do anything like that? You know, hardly any. And the white people are probably even worse than a lot of the blacks, you know, because they go right along with the system. Oh, whatever the system says, man, I pledge allegiance to the rotten system. Yeah, and I do that all the time, man, because they're right and all these other people are wrong. Right. Yeah, I wish more and more people would refuse to stand up. And kids in school are trying to get it where they can get out of pledging allegiance to the flag. You know, you can love a country. I never could understand loving a country. I can't get my arms around the country. But I do love the area I occupy. Wherever I live, I feel allegiance to that. You know, I was in California. I felt allegiance to Southern California, no matter how messed up it was. Then I got back here to Indiana, and I found in many ways it's more messed up than Southern California, but I still have a certain amount of allegiance to this area of the country, in my home. And if any creeps wanted to invade it with the thought of doing bodily harm to I or my neighbors, I'd be the first one out in the street with a gun. Yeah. But as far as saying, I love my country, you know, there's parts of this country I've been through that are shit. You ever driven through a lot of that desert out west on the way to California? Say, what the hell did we put this in the country? We should have left this with the Spanish or left the Mexicans have this. You know, we could have just had the West Coast and then had some kind of a 100-year, 200-year authority to drive through it. And let the Mexicans worry about the damn desert out there and stuff like that. So there's, you know, this, I love the whole country and I love every spot in this country. That's more bullshit. Well, me and my lady, we went out to a movie on Sunday afternoon. A lot of times we do that, have a hamburger, take a little time off. We went to see, Hell or High Water. Yeah, it's a modern Western movie. And it shows the West in the way it is. Towns are disappearing. Stores are closing up all over the place. People are dirt poor. It's like the Depression out there. Only the people today aren't quite as good at living through that kind of thing as they were back in the Depression days, I don't think. So it's a story about two brothers and a Texas Ranger. Anyhow, this is, I think, our kind of movie. It is bare bones and gets down to brass tacks. And these boys are robbing banks to pay off the mortgages on their ranch. And they're trying not to hurt the local people. Even when they go into the bank, they take the money on the bottom of the stack, which is the bank money, not the people's deposits and like that. And they just take small bills and so forth, and they usually average about $7,000 or $8,000 a bank. It's an interesting film, and I don't think it'll make a lot of money because I don't think that a lot of white people out there understand the depth of this film. But if you get a chance to see it, go see it and let me know what you think. Besides, I like cowboy movies. But I like cowboy bank robber movies better. Well, I'm going to get into an article here that's going to let you know why we really don't have a chance to do it like we'd like to do it, and do it as quick as we'd like to do it, because we're already under military dictatorship, and we voted it in. We love it. They've got military defense plants building weapons of mass destruction in every state in the Union, and that was planned that way, and your congressmen and senators feed off of it. And Washington feeds off of it. So if you expect the bulk of the white public to resist war and want to bring the troops home, forget it. They love it. They're making good money. I mean, even here in Warsaw, they've got the Zimmer plant making more money than they ever made, building arms and elbows and legs for all these people getting blown up all over the world. It's a constant moneymaker. So how are you going to get white people like that to agree about we've got to save the white race? Forget it. They don't want to save the white race. Or at least they don't want to save it the way we think is a healthy way to save it. So let's sort of get beyond that and get beyond the Trump thing and the Hillary thing. That's going to go the way it's going to go. Hillary's going to get in. She's going to be more of a war hawk and so forth like that. And these plants will be putting out more and more weapons, and the people will have more money to spend, and they'll pray to God and go to church and say, "Whoa, wow, God's been good to us. We got contracts for more military stuff." Yeah, it's a bunch of shit, boys, I'll tell you. I had to go on my... Every few months I have to go in and get my labs checked and see whether I'm dying or not. So far I'm not dying, but anyhow, I had to go in yesterday. And I'm sitting around and I'm always looking at the magazines on the table. And there was a magazine there called Freedom. And I said, well, when anybody calls something Freedom, I'm suspect. You know, that's like Patriot and stuff, you know. Well, anyhow, I looked in the back and it was a damn church of what? What was it? What the hell was that church? Scientology. They're expanding all over the place. All you have to do is call something a church and come up with a cockamamie theory, and away you go. Ron L. Hubbard, who was nothing but he was a science fiction writer. That's fine. And he was evidently a good science fiction writer, but having some contact with the whatever, no. But anyhow, I started looking through the magazine. I came up with a couple of things. I said, damn, this is good stuff. Well, here's an article written by Joe Cirincione. Sounds like a good Italian boy. On the new trillions of dollars arms race. Because you're reading this magazine, you likely don't need us to tell you that the United States spends a lot of money on defense, or in other words, war, and that as a nation, in total disregard of the famous military-industrial complex warning that President Eisenhower issued in the middle of the 20th century, I remember hearing that on television myself, and I was just a little kid at the time. We are set to spend $585 billion this year, less than the peak spending of $663.7 billion FY2010. Yet still, this amount is more than twice that of the next 10 nations combined, including their allies. According to Joe Cirincione, the president of the Plowshares Fund, a global security foundation that makes grants aimed at reducing nuclear and conventional stockpiles, keeping the nuclear weapons out of terrorist hands, and specializes in the conflict resolution. Well, I'm glad somebody's trying to have conflict resolution. It sure isn't the White House. It sure is not the Defense Department. Cirincione is a member of Secretary of State John Kerry's International Security Advisory Board and a tireless force for peace in a time of escalating tensions. Well, I take a tongue-in-cheek on that. The magazine asked Cirincione to update us on what's gone well and what's gone wrong in the defense war budget policy and spending. Regarding man's ability to blow the planet to kingdom come, he says the report card is mixed. U.S. negotiators successfully accomplished a difficult task, restricting new threats, particularly Iran, which they overrate Iran, that's for sure. Left unchecked, Iran would have been in full production of nuclear weapons very soon. Well, with Israel sitting there with hundreds of them, what the hell do you expect? Because of the new international treaty, Iran's nuclear weapons horizon has been pushed back at least 10 years. And with the inspection regimen, the agreement put in place, the world will have significant lead time to react should Iran stray. Well, this is not part of the article. I'm not that interested because, well, I'm just not. We've been less successful in convincing adversaries and allies not to modernize the existing nuclear arsenal, leading to what can only be described today as a new arms race. Cerencioni said that this is not just modernizing existing forces, which everyone is doing. It's also creating new ones like Russia's purported nuclear torpedo with a 6,000-mile range. Oh, jeez. The Status 6, which can devastate wide swaths of countryside with radiation, well, like we've already done in the Middle East with our depleted uranium poisoning. With such an arsenal trained on Washington, D.C., well, that wouldn't be too bad. And New York City, Cicioni said, I wouldn't sweat global warming or rising sea levels. Cicioni told Freedom Magazine, trillions will be spent worldwide on this new arms race, and there'll be no one to stop it over the next 30 years. You know, and Trump, you know what Trump's going to do if he gets in there. He's going to raise the military budget even more probably than Hillary. Over the next 30 years, the U.S. alone plans to spend $1 trillion on nuclear weapons. Of course, where are they going to get the money? They're going to borrow the money. They're going to print the money like always. Well, I think the whole thing's going to collapse before that. Terrorists are not deterred by nuclear weapons. Every dollar spent on this outdated, overpriced, and unnecessary arsenal is a dollar less for our true defense needs. The military-industrial complex is so entrenched, it literally cannot be stopped. The Senate has a little-known entity called ICBM Caucus. The ICBM Caucus is made up of senators from northern states that contain the majority of the United States intercontinental ballistic missile silos. Isn't that a pleasant thought? Any attempt to mothball that aging fleet of weapons aimed at Russia is met with flag waving and stern rebuke. Those effects at rationality always die in committee, like he does of many initiatives backed by the military-industrial complex. Cerencioni views the funding of these antiquated missiles as pork. Now we're getting into what I want to talk about. Everybody wants to bring home the bacon. The difference is this bacon can blow up the world. Another problem is alarmist politicians constantly trying to out-chicken little one another. Whether presidential candidate Donald Trump says incorrectly, according to Mr. Cicerone, that our military is underfunded. Underfunded. Or a senator says that a new weapon system is necessary. It often is not. Fear-mongering enables more and more tax dollars to be spent on systems intended to fight the kind of conventional war we are highly unlikely to face. Unnecessarily or outmoded defense projects are difficult to get rid of because defense contractors, now get this, have strategically placed research and development jobs as well as manufacturing plants in nearly all the 435 congressional districts. Companies learned years ago that outsourcing the weapons building process to as many congressional districts as possible puts Congress in a box. You got that, boys and girls? K killing off the programs also kills off local jobs. And killing local jobs is bad for business if your business is to get reelected. So who's crying for more arms manufacturing? It's the people who get the jobs in those plants. Members of Congress are decidedly in getting reelected business. And it sometimes even works the other way when Congress forcing unwanted pork programs on the Pentagon. For instance, the Army has been trying to end construction of new tanks for years. In a Senate Appropriations and Intelligence Committee hearing in January 2015, Army Chief of Staff General Ray Odenaro told Chairman John McCain, that jerk from Texas that's leading his competitor by 20 points. You believe that old crooked son of a bitch could do that? That's how bad the public is. That's how bad the white race is that we're trying to save. We are still having to procure systems we don't need. We're spending hundreds of millions of dollars on tanks that we simply don't have the structure anymore. The biggest defense contractors know a profitable thing when they see it. However, they know how to protect their interests. Well, you see, a sidelight to that is that in a few years ago, we had a military package for Egypt, and we were wanting to force Egypt to take millions of dollars in tanks. And Egypt didn't want them. But they were forcing Egypt to take all these tanks. So anyhow, Cicerone said that there are a couple of important voices of reason in the Senate. He especially likes the work of California Senior Senator Dianne Feinstein. Oh my God, it's a Jew. What she's doing, she's important because she's the ranking member of the Senate Appropriations and Intelligence Committee, he added. She knows threat from bluster. He even tweeted to her, "You go, Senator," in support of her struggle to reduce funding for new nuclear-tipped cruise missiles. So that in that position, on that point, we have to say, okay, she's a Jew and she's doing something good. All the stories of wasted time and money come together in the F-35. Boy, this is something else. Listen to this. F-35, $1 trillion boondoggle. This supersonic stealth fighter sounds good on paper, but it is a troubled weapon in search of a fight. It's a good thing there's no fight for it to engage in because its development has been marred by systems that don't work. That would be bad enough, but the F-35 is also emblematic of the kind of mission creep found across the defense budget. The military repeatedly requests new capabilities for the F-35, requiring Lockheed Martin. Now, Lockheed Martin's one of the most crooked, corrupt companies in the United States. Started way before the First World War. They were corrupted, and they've been getting worse ever since. There's a good book on this. I don't have the title in front of me. I have a review by the author someplace in my computers around here. Hopefully I can find it and replay it for you. Anyhow, engineers make costly redesigns that ultimately send the manufacturer back to the Appropriations Committee for more money. The current F-15 fleet, now get this, costs about $12 million per plane. The proposed F-35 fleet costs out at, are you sitting down? $200 million a plane. And they don't work. Yeah. See, this is our dictatorship. Right here is our dictatorship. They don't mind if we're all every day worried about the niggers, you know. Yeah. That's a personal problem, usually. But these guys are your real super enemies. I mean, these are the power structure. And they've got people in all the communities around these defense plants just turning out all these weapons of mass destruction just as happy as they can be because they got a new car and they're going to get a new house, and they're going to go to Florida in the wintertime. We spend and spend because threats, real and perceived, drive us to protect ourselves. Bad actors like North Korea, which I believe they've blown that issue way out of the water. Of course he's a nutcase, but who was it that gave him millions of gallons of fuel oil a few years ago? George Bush Jr. He gave him millions and millions of gallons of kerosene, I remember, and he's given him a lot more. According to them, they're trying to keep them peaceful, but that's bullshit. It has to do with taking care of these corporations that sell us stuff. So North Korea is trying to create weapons of mass destruction to annihilate us, or more practically, leverage concessions out of us. Sarasoni, however, does sound fairly positive note on that front. The bad news is North Korea just had another nuclear test, and the good news is that it's failed. Well, the military-industrial complex is thrilled to death when a chubby little boy does something like this that they know isn't going to work, and they know they can't reach the United States and like that. Of course, this scares our South Korea, scares them to death. South Korea is where tens of thousands of our jobs went. So why should we care if the North Korean wants to take over South Korea and chase the corporations out and they have to come back to the United States? Why would we want to send troops to fight and die? You know, all this is bullshit. It's all to protect the corporations. So we must ask ourselves some hard questions. If outspending near next 10 nations by an aggregate factor of 2 is not enough, what is? Why must we take 2 steps backward for every 1 step forward in disarmament? Well, there's no money in that. The biggest question of all, what will it take for us to realize that money we spend on weapons of war could be spent on education, housing, and healthcare, infrastructure, art, and music, and all which enhances humanity rather than the potential annihilated? Well, you know the answers to that. I know the answers to that. Nothing changes. Well, what are you prepared to do to change it? Well, yeah, right. Well, let's go on with a little bit of this other article here on the same subject. When the Pentagon learned it possessed $16 billion worth of ammunition that was banned by international treaty or had become obsolete or unusable, the organization that oversees the United States military spent $1 billion to destroy it. Jesus Christ. According to a government accountability office report, some of the destroyed ammunition, however, may have been usable. Oh, we could have killed more people and we didn't do it? Shit. In order to warn the country about attacks by cruise missiles, drones, and other low-flying weapons, the Pentagon spent $2.7 billion over the last 18 years on a system known as JLENS, which has repeatedly proven to be inadequate, according to the Los Angeles Times. And 4 missile defense systems were scrapped after the military spent $10 billion to develop them. You starting to get the picture, boys and girls? That we're under a military dictatorship? The literal combat ship, and we voted to go under, become part of a military-industrial dictatorship. We voted for these assholes. The Pentagon spent $2.7 billion on a system known as JLENS, which was repeated. I read that. The literal combat ship, LCS, was meant to be the backbone of the service combat fleet. However, according to the Center for International Policy, the LCS is fundamentally underarmed, underarmored, undercrewed, giving it limited utility in literal nearshore waters and making it a non-asset in terms of service combat strength. In addition, each ship was supposed to cost $480 million to become mission ready, yet the first four ships cost $780 million each. One LCS, the USS Milwaukee, suffered a complete loss of propulsion and had to be towed to port 20 days after her maiden voyage. In Afghanistan, the Air Force scrapped $500 million worth of transport planes meant for the Afghan air arm, according to the WarisBoring.com. And since 1997, the Pentagon has spent $32 billion on canceled weapons programs, according to the Washington Post. Only a few among the many thousands of these examples show that whether expanding the nation's territory, beating back the threat of communism, fighting the war on terror, cloaking themselves in the American flag, or invoking national security, the military and the multi-billion dollar defense contractors continue to pick the pockets of U.S. taxpayers, and they love it. They love it, just like they now love the niggers. Donald Trump is working on that. Good old racist Donald Trump. I love Negroes more than you do. I was just, I forgot to tell you, but I love them people. And I love the Mexicans, too. Yeah, I love them more than the Democrats. Are you still supporting Donald Trump? I don't support any of the bastards. At the start of the 20th century, defense spending was about 1% of gross domestic product. During World War II, it peaked out at 36%. And has never been less than 3.5% since, according to the Congressional Research Service and USGovernmentalSpending.com. Wonder how many people really go to that and read it. How much is being spent every minute, every second of the day? Not spent, gone in debt for. After President Barack Obama proposed his first budget, politicians accused his administration of evascurating the military. Yet, in a 2009 speech to the Economic Club of Chicago, then Defense Secretary Robert Gates, who served eight presidents, said in total, by one estimate, our budget adds up to about what the entire rest of the world combined spends on defense. Boy, we're a bunch of paranoid bastards. We're scared of our shadow. Only in parallel universe, that is Washington, D.C., would that be considered gutting defense. In order to slow down the rate at which the Pentagon burns through taxpayers' money, Congress passed the 2011 Budget Control Act, which limits defense spending through the fiscal year 2021. Yet the proposed 2017 budget, if approved, will still give $482.7 billion to the Department of Defense, including $58 billion for overseas contingency operations. In other words, giving it to all these countries to have these phony armies that don't fight, that can't fight. And scab on all the guns and give them to ISIS, which funds fighting terrorism in Iraq. Nation building. There's no nation building going on over there. That's all bullshit. There's no nation building going on at all in Afghanistan. And what's it our job to nation build anyhow? OCO has been called a slush fund because it provides the Pentagon with a relatively flexible source of funds that's been protected from legislated cuts made to all other federal discretionary spending, you know, like schools and colleges, roads, power grid, and so forth. According to the National Priorities Project, even after the Budget Control Act, the military accounts for more than 50% of all federal discretionary funds. Well, I think I'll stop there because I'm going to get nauseated and puke on my computer board, and that would cost me money to fix. So this idea of saving the white race is becoming sort of a joke, you know? The biggest percentage of the white race are our enemies. And most other people in the world's enemies. So the only way we can look at it is a percentage of the white race that want to survive and will survive and maybe rebuild, but doesn't have to be. That's why it's a waste of time to propagandize. I mean, here the Klan running around at night putting slips of paper with candy on people's driveways. Jeez. I was stupid when I did that kind of shit back in the 70s. And now it's even stupider. So don't waste your money on trying to wake up these white people, because either there are some who are awake that are not awake at all. Most of them are not awake at all. And don't interfere with their bullshit, because they'll kill you. Right now, there's not, all of a sudden you notice a little slack off of the political campaign. That's because nigger ball started. Nigger football, nigger basketball. Nigger this, nigger that. We don't have time to worry about who's going to run the country. We got football. But now this jerk black guy won't stand up for the Pledge of Allegiance. You got to kill his ass. Oh, I used to think whites were superior. I don't know. I'm thinking less and less than that. I'm thinking a certain amount of whites are superior. A certain amount of whites that are genius at the top of the pyramid. But I'm pretty much getting to the point where I'm saying the rest of them, they're far from it. Now, let's see what else is going on here. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on these nigger kills baby stories in the press and stuff like that. I'm going to get more away from a lot of this newsy stuff that Trump said this and Hillary said that and the libertarian said we don't want a wall. That's a waste of time. Why should we waste our time on it? It's just wearing ourselves out for nothing. So let's keep our eye on some heavy-duty stuff and observe it. And at least we'll know when the mushroom cloud goes. We'll know why it goes. And we'll be ready for it. We stand out in front of the house and say, hey, how about that? What were those movies came out in the 70s? Peter Sellers. How I Stopped Worrying About Everything and Worshiped the Bomb. Those are good movies. Those are good movies to play for your kids. And On the Beach, that was a good one. Where a lot of people just got to the point where they resigned themselves. They're all going to die. You know, it's not going to be, like they said in the article, it's not going to be the sea level rising. Not going to be shit like that in global warming. It's going to be guys pressing a button. And they're all, Hillary was saying, oh my God, how horrible that would be with Donald Trump's finger on the button. It's horrible to think of anybody's finger being on any button, for Christ's sake. Would you trust the future of mankind with Hillary's finger? And you don't even know where it's been. And Donald Trump, he's liable to freak out and go into hysterics at any moment. Well, when one of those damn things goes off, they'll be undoubtedly hit Chicago, and I can stand out here in my front yard and watch it go up in the sky. I mean, it's going to be something else.
Finally tonight, part one of a new series called Blueprint America, produced in collaboration with WNET in New York. As the country grapples with the latest financial crisis, it also confronts some critical choices. What to do about our aging infrastructure? Ray Suarez starts us off with a look at crumbling roads and bridges.
It was just a little over a year ago that a bridge carrying Interstate 35 over the Mississippi in Minneapolis, Minnesota, came crashing down during the evening rush hour, killing 13 people and injuring over 140 others. The bridge recently reopened, but the disaster in Minnesota woke the nation up to a disturbing fact. Structurally deficient bridges and overpasses exist in every state. According to the Federal Highway Administration, more than 72,000 bridges across the country are in some sort of trouble. This summer, I went to Pennsylvania, which holds the dubious distinction of having more structurally deficient bridges than any other state. This is a raised section of Interstate 95 right outside Philadelphia. On average, 180,000 trucks and cars pass over this 8-mile stretch each day. And it's a safe bet. Most of those drivers have no idea what's going on right beneath their wheels. On this day, an inspector is monitoring a key part of the structure. He's face to face with areas of cracked concrete, rusting steel, and holes in girders you could put your fist through. Engineer Charles Davies from the Pennsylvania Department of Transportation, PennDOT, reviews most major bridge repairs in the area.
When you see the drainage system that is almost completely non-functional now, when you're here in during a thunderstorm, it can really be a dramatic, almost like Niagara Falls coming off these piers.
Last March, a state inspector, passing by here after a lunch break, noticed potentially disastrous cracks in a previously examined column. No one could say exactly when the pillar and the portion of I-95 it was supporting would have collapsed, but there was talk of weeks, not years.
The system would not have been functional without this column, and it could have led to a catastrophic failure.
Emergency repairs on the damaged column shut this busy section of highway down for 2.5 days and created a traffic nightmare on this major East Coast artery. The close call is what has inspectors busy 7 months later.
It told us how difficult it sometimes is to predict the behavior of components that are seriously deteriorated. It was a location that we had identified for repairs. We thought we had more time than ultimately it turned out to be. So these are difficult to predict, particularly when they reach the end of their service life and when conditions get severely deteriorated.
It's a challenge faced in most states as officials try to puzzle out which aging bridges need attention first. PennDOT has plans to rebuild this raised portion of I-95, but replacing just this 8-mile section will cost an estimated $2 billion. The price tag for repairing all of Pennsylvania's bridges is an estimated $14 billion, and nobody can say for sure where that money would come from, including the state's governor, Ed Rendell. Rendell is prominent among the state officials pressing the federal government for help.
States and local governments in this country pay 75% of the cost of maintaining our infrastructure. That's unlike almost any other developed nation where the federal government pays the lion's share of the cost. Unless the federal government's willing to step up and develop a real infrastructure repair program, we're never going to be able to do the two things we need to do. One, maintain what we have, and two, build new things.
Governor Ed Rendell took to the road last summer, crossing his state in an effort to highlight, among other things, the region's crumbling transportation system and what he's trying to do about it. Rising repair bills coincide with severe strains on the nation's highway trust fund. Congress recently injected $8 billion into that fund, but most state officials, Rendell among them, see that as a short-term fix, not a long-term solution.
We lead the nation in bridges 75 years or older.
Rendell co-chairs a nonpartisan coalition of elected officials called Building America's Future. Along with California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger and New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, he's leading an effort to make the funding of infrastructure a top national priority. Rendell and his coalition allies argue that incidents like the Minneapolis bridge disaster are symptomatic of a system that's been allowed to deteriorate for too long.
In the first half of the last century, Americans went on an infrastructure building spree. And we've made good use of the things that were built, but we've been reluctant to pay to replace and repair thousands of miles of bridges, tunnels, roads. Instead, choosing to cross our fingers and rely on the good work of our parents, grandparents, even great-grandparents. But by that delay, we're just making sure that the eventual bill is even bigger.
Do we want to be a third-rate nation, or do we still want to be, you know, the greatest country in the world when it comes to economy and moving around? I mean, the American infrastructure, our transportation system, was the envy of the world for decades and decades. Now it's laughable.
What was laughable when we spoke to the governor during the summer, before the global financial meltdown, may have become the new normal, an America of burdened and deficit-prone local budgets, and a federal government hemmed in by the need to borrow new trillions to save the markets and the banks. Fixing roads, bridges, and rails may have to take a number and get in a long line of priorities in search of funding. But that's what makes this challenge so daunting. People who've been struggling to patch holes in the system say the need to spend can't wait for the ability to spend to catch up.
The figure, I believe, is that we have had...
Tim Carson is a member of the Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission.
The interstate system is looking at the end of its useful life with literally trillions of dollars required to reconstruct that system.
Carson opposed, and Governor Rendell supported, an offer from a European consortium to collect the tolls and take over maintenance and management of the turnpike in return for $13 billion for the state. The offer's been withdrawn, and the feds have turned down Pennsylvania's request to collect tolls on Interstate 80. Don't like the tolls you already pay? You won't like the future Carson sees of a country where drivers face many more fees.
We're going to have to move toward these direct user charges and specifically toward tolling the federal interstate system.
Here on the front lines of the battle, engineers will continue their triage beneath Pennsylvania's bridges, constantly worrying they might get it wrong.
Like the problem that we had in March, we may make a judgment about how much time we have to repair that doesn't turn out to be accurate. That is something that we'll have to face with more frequency if the resources are not there.
It amounts to a game of Russian roulette, being played out not just here in Pennsylvania, but across the nation.
Tomorrow. And you thought all those freeways and superhighways were for to transport the kiddies to the beach? Well, I got news for you. They weren't designed for that at all. They were designed, starting with Eisenhower, to develop a system of highways, superhighways, like the Autobahn in Germany, so that when we went to war with Russia, we could move the army around. That's what that was all about. That's what instigated all this. It wasn't to help you taxpayers go on vacation. It's the military-industrial complex. Well, once the Cold War was over, what did they need with it? They weren't going to have to transport armies on it. There was no big enemy that's about to attack us. So what did they do? Fuck the interstate highway system. Fuck it. What do we care? And that's exactly what happened. Now, if the states, these governors like this one speaking, wanted to do something about it, states have to start circling the wagons and refusing to send money to Washington, D.C., because they can't do anything without your money and your credit. So the states should circle the wagon, build their infrastructure up by not sending money to the federal government. Oh, well, that would be like secession. Yeah, it would be. And that's the only thing that could possibly save this country, is the individual states rebuilding themselves and keeping their money at home. But they won't do it. No, we are a third world country, and we're going to continue to become more and more a third world country because that's the way it's designed. Sorry, boys and girls. Terrible Tommy just knows how to offend everybody, doesn't he? Boy, what an asshole.
Sky Pie!
Now, all of this stupid bullshit that children have been so crippled by has grown out of something called the self-esteem movement. The self-esteem movement began in 1970, and I'm happy to say it has been a complete failure. Because studies have repeatedly shown that having high self-esteem does not improve grades, does not improve career achievement, it does not even lower the use of alcohol, and most certainly does not reduce the incidence of violence of any sort. Because as it turns out, extremely aggressive, violent people think very highly of themselves. Imagine that. Sociopaths have high self-esteem. Who would have thunk, huh? I love when this kind of thing happens. I love when these politically correct ideas crash and burn and wind up in the shithouse. Here's another one that bit the dust. This practice of playing Mozart during pregnancy so the fetus can hear it. It was supposed to increase intelligence. Didn't work. Didn't work. All it did was sell a lot of CDs and piss off a whole lot of fetuses.